You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul, and today we're going to be talking about public safety. We're going to be going a little bit deeper on the Part 107 versus COA issue. As you guys know, we talked about this a little while ago in discussing what's a better option for public safety officers. So talking about firefighters and police officers, should they get a Part 107 or should they go the public COA route? Well, here today, we're here to clear up some issues, and thanks to Mr. Keenan Newton from the Linwood Fire Department, who is going to be here giving us details and information. He's just going to really take us to a little bit of deeper level of information. Keenan, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Paul. It's an absolute pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So if you guys remember in the show, and Keenan, I know you heard the show as well, about the public COA versus 107, and I guess in the public safety community, some people were saying, well, he's 80% right, 20% wrong, but he's got good intentions. And one thing I think is really important is I love to hear feedback from people. I'm not afraid to hear feedback. I want to get the best information out as possible. And today we're here to kind of go and close the gap for that 20%.
Yep.
But we're also going to be talking about a couple other things too. A story that happened to Keenan in addition to what's coming out here at Drone U. Now, a lot of you guys have been hearing that we've been talking about a whole new public safety system. And I don't want to get into the details of how we're going to do this. I want to keep that away so our competition doesn't try to essentially do the same thing, because this is going to be much better than anything they have out there. But we're also going to be talking about, you know, why this program is going to be different than any other program out there. And the last thing I want to cover is you recently went to Florida State University to check out their emergency management or emergency disaster scenario training, whatever it was, and we'll go into that. So first off, let's talk about public COA versus 107. What did I screw up?
All right. Well, I want to say really screw up. You actually kind of talked a little bit about older information, so specifically around the SGI. And one of the things is that actually under a 107, you can get an SGI.
So for those who don't know what an SGI is, what is an SGI?
It's called a special government interest. It's more of a project name, because one of the things that I discovered and learned that the people that were at Harvey and Irma, when they called that system operations support number and said, hey, I need an SGI, they were like, what's an SGI? And they had no clue. So they were like, an ECOA? Oh, we know what an ECOA is. So they were all – the terminology hasn't completely spread through the FAA, is what it appears to be.
It's so new is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's really new. And what was interesting is it wasn't just public safety that was getting these SGIs or these ECOAs. It was also utility companies. So they were flying under 107. And also the humanitarian UAV efforts that were out there. Like there was some working with the Red Cross and whatnot. And they were also getting their SGIs, but they were flying under 107. Mm-hmm. So it's not just strictly if you have a public COA to get one of these. You can have a 107 or a public COA, and either way you can get it.
That's good to know. So when you're talking ECOA, you mean an emergency COA, correct?
Emergency COA, absolutely,
awesome.
Yes.
And where would emergency COAs, again, just kind of delving into this issue, emergency COAs, when and where are they useful? So you're talking about the disaster response from Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. But can you give us some other examples of when a good time to get an emergency COA would be?
Basically, whenever there's a TFR or whenever you need to fly a specific type of mission that your current regulatory framework that you're flying under does not support. So if you have a public COA and it says, for instance, that you can't fly within 5 nautical miles of an airport, you would technically need to get an ECOA in order to fly closer to that airport. Another example is pretty much anytime there's a TFR. So in the case of the story I'm going to talk about, the state decided to throw up a TFR, and I'll explain why they threw up a TFR. It was kind of silly, but that would be another perfect example of when you would get an ECOA. So it's really the same reasons why you have any type of certificate of authorization. It's to do something that is outside the bounds of the normal framework, but you still have to find a way to make sure that you're going to fly safely.
Gotcha. So now one question I have that you kind of hit on is you said, you know, there were some other guys that were working for Red Cross. And for those of you who have been watching the show, I think you know who we're talking about here. And one person was saying, and I forget who it is, and I don't want to name names anyway, but one person was saying, I think it was from the Texas Department of something, that any drone pilot who came down here and flew, we were talking about this at dinner a couple nights ago, was essentially going to be arrested on the spot if they were interfering with operations from the government. Do you want to elaborate on that?
So what I had heard is basically that if you were flying into certain counties, and basically in the way things work in Texas is when a disaster happens, the judge and the sheriff, they basically run the entire disaster. And what it came down to is if they saw that anybody was flying in an unauthorized way, they were just going to arrest them and deal with it the next day, just to get them out of the way. And it's – I mean, are different down in Texas, and that's what the sheriff decided to say and potentially do. I don't know if that actually happened.
I'm not sure where the authority there would lie.
I'm not sure where the authority would lie, but, you know, things are sometimes a little bit different in Texas.
Oh, yes, they are.
And, you know, I understand the point of view. I mean, a lot of times when I have been on calls and we've had, like, tornadoes come through the town, we don't let people that live in town back into the town until we establish that the scene is safe. And if you try to break those lines, you're going to get arrested. So I consider this kind of along the same lines. You're coming into an area that's a disaster area. There's no idea if you can sustain yourself. Can you go to the bathroom? Can you feed yourself? Do you have water? Do you have shelter? Do you have somewhere to sleep? Do you have all these things? And you've got people that obviously have good intentions, but they haven't really thought through the entire process and how to coordinate with the rest of the efforts themselves.
So would you say that when we talked about Hurricane Harvey and Irma for drone pilots and instructed them, unless they have a direct communication with chain of command, is probably a good idea not to go?
Oh, it's absolutely not a good idea to go. So very first thing is my suggestion is you always train with – if you're going to be working with teams that are flying in hurricane disaster areas or any type of disaster area, ideally, even if you're – not a public safety agency, if you're just a nonprofit kind of humanitarian, you're going to want to train with them because they want to know what you can do and to make sure that they have the confidence. They just can't sit there and have a person taking every single phone call while they're trying to figure out their own operations. And they get that people want to help, but it's just not practical. So if you really want to be involved in this and you really want to do things in the right way, start planning ahead of time before the actual incident occurs, because everybody wants to help when it occurs. But we never really see this type of effort before the actual event starts. I mean, you have things like Air Bears and those other types of organizations that obviously are trying to do some of the right things to actually prepare in case something actually does happen.
Gotcha. So, all right, let's move forward because I forgot that we're limited on time. We're going to have the FAA on the show right after this. So was there anything else that we missed when it comes to the comparison of 107 to the public code?
The SGI was pretty much the probably the biggest thing that I had noticed. A couple things just to clarify, you know, you have the blanket, you have a blanket COA and you have a jurisdictional COA, and a jurisdictional COA can actually give you more power to do things as opposed to the blanket. You can think of the blanket a lot like the 333s we used to get back in the day. It's very structured very similarly. But one thing that I always suggest to agencies, always go for your 107. Always, always get your 107.
Is there a particular reason as to why?
I actually have a number of reasons why. First of all, you're going to be able to get in the air within about 10 days. Even if you file for a public COA, by the time you get your letter of intent from your attorney general for whoever you need to get it from, get it submitted to the FAA, go back and forth, whatever you need to go back and forth with, and then get your approval, it's going to be over 10 days. With the 107, you can pretty much be up in the air right away. Second, when you get a public COA, that's only for public operations. So like emergencies and training for emergencies. Let's say maybe the mayor wanted you to do a demonstration. You can't do that under a public COA. You need to have some other type of regulatory framework. And this is where a 107 can come into play. Also, depends on your interpretation, but if you have a, let's say a spill or pays rule in your specific locality and a hazmat situation occurs, what happens when you have to lose your drone or you lose something? Who do you bill? Well, under a public COA, I don't think you can bill that agency for that for what just got spilled. But if you're flying under 107, then you can submit a bill saying you submit this to the insurance company and say, hey, this is the equipment that I lost. I need to be reimbursed for it. So again, it's a matter of interpretation because some people have different views on it, but it's important to kind of weigh that out. So I always suggest a 107, and whenever you can possibly fly under 107. Now, public COAs do have the benefit of being able to fly at night from the get-go, but you still have to go through the night you still have to have a night vision class. You still have to do that training. And you can fly over people under certain circumstances. Not a blanket. It's only if someone's life is in immediate danger or if it's non-qualified crew personnel, such as other law enforcement officers or firefighters within a defined scene. So you can't go flying over anybody under any circumstance. It's only under those two conditions. So,
gotcha. So now also what we're seeing coming out too is that there are now new public standards for public safety officers to use drones.
Yep.
And we're seeing that in a couple different places right now. And the standards seem to be set fairly low.
I would say that, and this is kind of a normal process. So in the case of NFPA 2400, you know, it's really just kind of laying out the framework of what's going to be coming ahead of time. But like any other standards and any other large organization, there's this whole cycle, and it's going to take a while for this to come out. Originally, as I understood, this was going to be an accelerated rollout of NFPA 2400. It was supposed to roll out, I believe, next year in 2018. But however, I hear now it's going into the three-year cycle, so we won't actually see that until 2020.
Gotcha.
And then once they come out with that, then they're going to go into deeper and deeper standards. But it could be 10, 15 years until we get like a truly deep level set of
standards to operate by.
To operate by,
like,
yeah.
Defining cold zones and hot zones.
Defining cold zones, warm zones, and hot zones. So that's another thing too. You know, you flip that around and, you know, all good.
Well, as you can tell, guys, I am a firefighter at heart here, but not one by day trade. But anyway, there are standards that are going to be important that essentially help public safety officers deal with more complicated situations.
Yep.
You know, like flying over people. If you're trying to get people out of a building and you're trying to showcase hotspots on the roof to where to poke the roof out for ventilation and people come running out of the building, you know, you've got to have stuff like that covered. And I don't think that the FAA would really enforce against you for doing things like that if it was illegal. But you have a lot more difficult situations that you need to be prepared for.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what these new standards are trying to mitigate. And as, like you said, you know, it seems like what they're trying to do is just put out some information that says, this is essentially what we want to do. And they're waiting for public reaction to say, whoa, 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 this is, you know, this is very low level information. We got to take it a few steps deeper. And then that's when they get the information that they need. It's like an immediate feedback loop almost.
Absolutely. So again, it's going to take time, and there are going to be organizations that are going to be basically tip of the spear and kind of define these standards. And then eventually the standards agencies are going to maybe tweak them a little bit and then adopt them. I mean, that's how pretty much everything works. So.
Gotcha. So now one thing I also wanted to talk about is we here at DroneU are coming out with a total public safety course. So this is going to go over the many different scenarios that you could essentially be utilizing drones for. Now, it's really important, in my opinion, that this course is taught by someone who is in the public safety arena. They are dealing with this right now. They're dealing with it at a high level. And I think that's why we have Keenan here, because Keenan's really working this from all angles and really providing deep level information. And I think this is really important for a lot of you to understand, because there are a lot of drone companies and there are a lot of drone service providers who will willy-nilly go around and train everyone and their mother how to fly drones without understanding that the decisions and information that they give to other public safety officers could ultimately be life-threatening or life-altering for other people. And I want to give the example of crime scene reconstruction, right? If someone doesn't really know the ins and the outs of mapping or how to measure the accuracy therein or how to get the best accuracy possible, you could have a major effect on someone. And here's what I mean. If we're doing a map of an accident and we only get one opportunity to map it because, well, once you clear the road, the accident's gone, right? You don't have the information anymore.
Yep.
Now, if we were to map that and we didn't have a good GPS data, if we took our oblique imagery at too high of an angle, so say like 5 degrees, 10 degrees of an angle,
mm-hmm.
Then we could have obscure data. And if that's obscure data, we're to essentially show that car one T-bone car 2 because the lines, the skid marks on car 1 were actually 10 feet longer than they really were, indicating that car 1 was going at a higher rate of speed than car 2. You could actually prosecute someone based on that evidence when the evidence wasn't accurate whatsoever. And I don't know if you've watched the show on HBO with John Oliver.
Where
he talks about, you know, can we agree with the level of scientific understanding that this is evidence? That's not even something people say in the scientific community. And this evidence could be used and put people in jail that maybe shouldn't be put in jail. Maybe he wasn't going 55, he was going 45. Maybe his rate of speed was actually in accordance with the speed limit, and thus he was not at fault. Whatever, I'm just trying to give an example here.
Right.
I think it's so important that the right people are doing public safety training, because there are far-reaching implications to training people how to use drones. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And a lot of schools out there are, you know, have the right intentions, but either they're just getting new into the whole public safety and they don't really understand everything there is and they're trying to catch up, or they're kind of, I don't want to say one trick pony, but I don't know how else to describe it. So they're very good at search and rescue, or they're very good at law enforcement. But when it comes to the whole grand picture of public safety, they just don't have the whole thing. And there's very, very few, if any, out there that really have the entire picture. And that's one of the things that we're trying to get done here at Drone News, is really provide that entire picture to our students.
Yeah, and we also want to provide a total package as well.
Right.
And I'm not going to go into total detail about what that looks like, but essentially we believe that agencies should have a top to bottom, step by step information systems forms, the whole nine yards, to be able to train, retrain, and stay up to date with their recency exams while also continuing to learn over and over again. So we're really excited about that, and we will be coming out with that information towards the end of the year. I don't really want to overpromise it and whatnot, but we're going to be working with multiple fire agencies to essentially do some drills and classes and exercises and trainings. And this will be an in-person experience, so we're going to be very excited to hear that. Now, we've only got 2 minutes left, but tell us, you went to Florida State University.
Yep.
Okay, you took their public safety class. And what was it like? I mean, because it seems like what they tell you and what they do are a little bit different based off of what I've heard from you.
Well,
I mean, obviously they have good intentions, so I don't want to go into that with negative ideology.
No, it's not negative. I mean, again, they're sharing what their experiences were. So, again, they said advanced, you know, UAS course. I was hoping for maybe a little bit more across the board. But, you know, that team has specialized a lot in post-disaster recon. And that's what the course was really, really heavy about, is how you can use drones to actually, you know, map specific areas and how to recon for search and rescue. So that's what they really specialized in. Like handling structure fires, active shooter, barricaded subject type scenarios, that's probably not their sweet spot. But that's okay, because from my standpoint, I really wanted to learn more about what they did after Hurricane Harvey and what they did after Irma. So I thought that was actually really valuable. It's a really great course and very, very it was very informational for me as a whole. But again, it was, when I talked about that, they were kind of focused. That was their basic core focus.
So disaster management.
Yeah, disaster management.
So who is the right person to go to this class? Because it's really cheap. It's only $100.
It's $100.
So who's the right person for this?
Anybody that could be affected by a massive disaster, probably in the states of Florida.
So Gulf Coast.
Gulf Coast, yeah.
Gotcha.
Maybe California due to earthquakes. But beyond that, like in the Midwest, probably not quite as much, because we just don't deal with something on that scale.
It's a little bit boring in the Midwest. Is that what you're trying to say?
We have a little bits of excitement. We have little bits of excitement.
Well, on that bombshell, guys, that is going to do it for us today. We'll have Keenan on again to share his stories with public safety, because he's done some really interesting stuff and we want to hear more about that. But Keenan, thanks for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, guys, you'll be hearing more about those public safety classes soon enough, but stay tuned for that and so much more. Thanks again for watching, and you are watching the Ask Drone U podcast.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone Youth.